All right, and welcome back, everyone. I'm Stephen Roberts. I'm continuing on with my Cancel the Cabal Sunday afternoon Revolution Radio show. I normally just do 2 hours, but I had a friend, a very good friend, approach me a few days ago and said she had some breaking information she wanted to get out there on the air on my my biggest platform, she said. I could. So I invited her on the show here. I have Suzanne Pozell of OccupyCorporatism.com and the USIndependent.com. Suzanne is a very good writer, journalist, researcher, a mom, a wife. Welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Hello. Thank you.
Hello, yes. One of my favorite people in the world, too. So, how are you today?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Very good. What kind of breaking news do we have?
Well, this past week, it came out in media that the U.S. government has been funding the creation of the Cuban Twitter, that is called a social media network called Zunzunino, which is hummingbird in Spanish. And it was designed to inspire political unrest. I thought this was very fascinating, considering that we've seen so many manufactured revolutions throughout the world, that the U.S. government would be trying to cause problems in Cuba with Zunzunino. So this is a text messaging system that is designed to organize political demonstrations and was scheduled to release or be exposed to tens of thousands of users. And the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, is the project that was able to infiltrate Cuba with this fake Twitter social networking site. Now, how many of us go to social networking sites? I mean, we all do. And it doesn't matter if you're on Facebook or Twitter or Stumble or Reddit or any of the other ones. What's interesting to me is 47% of people get their news from social media. So they're not going directly to mainstream news or even alternative sites. They're getting their news through social media and then clicking through the links that are provided through their friends and their family and their contacts on social networking to get information about what's going on. And knowing that we're doing this, the U.S. government created this fake Twitter social networking site in order to make sure that the Cuban people have democracy in their country.
Yeah, okay. Shouldn't we say that it's just another social media that they've created? Because I can think of at least two right now that they created. One is Facebook, and, what's the other one now? But anyways, they're just trying to keep an eye on the Cubans, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're very concerned about the Cubans. The problem is, in response to this report, USAID stated, quote, "We are proud of Zunzunio's work in Cuba to provide basic humanitarian assistance, promote humanitarian rights and fundamental freedoms, as well as help information flow more freely to the Cuban people."
Yes, exactly. Where do we go from this? I mean, get the news out, and that's all we can do. It's not like we can actually protect the Cuban citizens or anything, but maybe they can get the news. Maybe they can get this news.
I hope so. Absolutely. Well, the problem is we trust social media, whether we know it's infiltrated or not. And unfortunately, to some extent, we kind of have to, because since we're using social media, we're trusting that not everyone is infiltrated, not everything is fake. And something has to be real. So we go ahead and trust the people that we make contacts with on social media that they're not government agents or provocateurs or useful idiots.
Or trolls, yeah. Useful idiots.
exactly. Now, Jay Carney came out and said that the Cuban Twitter is, quote, a developmental program and not a covert operation. He said that this program was enacted under discretion because it was operating in a, quote, non-permissive environment, with Cuba being one of those nations where this type of infiltration is used.
Yeah, we've created the Cuban Twitter, but we're not going to do anything with it. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Exactly. They're funding USAID, folks. Where do they get their money? You and I. It's taxpayer money. That's where they're getting the money to fund the people to create the software, to go into that country and suggest that people go onto this network, make it fun, make it some trendy thing that everybody wants to come in contact with. And as soon as they do, they come in contact with people on that network who want to start a revolution. How interesting, considering what we see in the Ukraine, considering what we see in Venezuela and Thailand, what we've seen in the Middle East.
Twitter was used very, very extensively in Egypt, wasn't it?
Yes, and Turkey banned Twitter. They lifted that ban, but they banned Twitter earlier this week because they didn't want people organizing to start a revolution. Now, it's obvious to me when I look at all of these revolutions, they all follow the same sort of pattern. The people rise up, there's a regime change, there are stability operations, a new patsy or a transitional council comes in to control the people. Maybe even an interim government that maybe sits there a little bit too long and becomes a permanent government, even though they're still classified as an interim government. An example of this is the National Transitional Council in Libya. But it never bodes well the day after the revolution for the people in these countries.
No, it doesn't.
And it's forever changed. And it's very difficult to get it back once you've lost it.
Well, the thing is, Suzanne, what really boggles my mind and blows by my head, you know, I don't get that these people don't figure things out over there. They've been duped by the elite so many times in these revolutions. There have been literally hundreds of them over the last 100 years. Created by the U.S. State Department, U.S. government, CIA, they're just countless. I don't understand why they just don't tell the CIA and U.S. interest to go flip off, you know?
You would think that. See, there's a huge amount of psychology going on, and a lot of us are not aware of even the things that we're all susceptible to. And things that we have to make conscious decisions about. We don't understand how to make a conscious decision. We think that we make conscious decisions all the time. What we're actually doing is making emotional reactions to information, to situations, to events, to people, places, and things that happen in our life. And we are taught how to do that at a very early age. Most of us as children watched our parents and our siblings and our loved ones and those closest to us, even the authoritative figures in our schools and our classmates, continuously react to information. So it becomes reinforced that that's what you're supposed to do. When you get information that is sensational, that causes an emotional response, we are then supposed to act on that emotional response.
Yes, people do think with their emotions. They don't think with their, they don't think logically a lot of times. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Now, that emotional response can be called our personal paradigm. Radio, people in our lives, television and news, all of these things influence our paradigm. And regardless of the results, and this might answer that question you were posing, regardless of the results, we go with what fits our paradigm, our currently existing paradigm that was created many, 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 many years ago when we were children, when we were infants. So what we react to, what we take in, what we support is what satisfies, what validates that paradigm that we created oh so many years ago. The radio that we listen to, the food that we eat, regardless of whether or not we know it's good for us, some of us still eat food that's bad for us. I've heard people say, well, you know, I don't eat McDonald's all the time. I just eat it occasionally.
Yeah, I know. just occasionally, you're still getting the full effect of the garbage.
Exactly. I've heard mothers say, well, I don't adhere to all the vaccines on the vaccine schedule. I've only had a few vaccines administered to my child. So considering what's in the vaccines, and just so you guys understand, and you probably know this, but I'll just go over it just for reinforcement. There's thimerosal, which is the mercury-based preservative, which has been linked to neurological disorders, including the autism spectrum disorder. Formaldehyde, which normally is injected into the body after it's dead. Laundry detergent, which
laundry
it
detergent.
Says right on the box. Yeah, it says right on the package, do not consume. If you do, call the poison control, correct?
Yeah, and it gets in your skin, yes.
Yes.
It well, the skin is the biggest organ. It can soak up any material quicker than anything else on your body, or inside your body, too.
Right. That's why if you're getting rid of the fluoride in your water, and I have a triple water filter, so we don't drink fluoride. I don't cook with fluoride in the water. I don't make juice or anything else with fluoride. But if you're not filtering the water that's coming out of your shower, your skin, your epidermis is extremely porous, like we were just talking about, and your feet are the most porous part of your body. So everything that you step on barefooted, when you're standing in the shower and the water's collecting, you're soaking up all of the chemicals that are in that water. And those have a biological effect on your chemical makeup.
Yes. Let's get back to the other rabbit, Suzanne. I've been told by quite a few people that 14 months is the key time period for things that, American corporate interests like to go into a country 14 months ahead of time and set up their social upheaval plans.
I don't know about that time frame, but I do understand it takes a minute to start a revolution. It takes some promotion. It takes marketing. Exposure, word of mouth, fans and people who support the revolution, participants. You don't want to show up to a rally and only 500 people or 50 people show up. You want 1,000 or several thousand or maybe even 500,000.
500,000, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So organizing this takes a little bit of time. And what happens before any of this starts is the marketing. I've heard recently people in independent media saying that they're selling freedom, that they're selling liberty. No, folks, don't buy that. Bumper sticker is not going to make you free. You're just promoting somebody else's agenda. Having your name on the credits does not mean that you're free. You're just supporting someone else's agenda. You cannot buy what you are. We are free. We are sovereign. We hand over the keys to that freedom to someone else every time we give up our freedoms. But we are free, and we can start behaving that way anytime we'd like. We have to get past that paradigm, though. We have to get past the marketing. We have to be able to see that we're being sold a product. And the most insidious products that you can be sold are ideas. My favorite is an idea whose time has come.
Yes.
What idea?
Yeah.
Whose idea? Where did it go? Where did it come from?
Yes.
Where is it going?
Which neocon or which liberal think tank did it come from, right?
Exactly. Slogans are effective because they get us to finish the sentence. If you notice, go back to English class with me for a minute. It's called a fragment sentence. Usually, you would hook two sentences or two fragment sentences together with a semicolon. what we do in our mind is we provide that semicolon and continue on finishing the sentence. That's exactly what they want. When they say something enigmatic, something that is a blanket statement that could be reinterpreted a million different ways, an idea whose time has come, you put your own personal, emotional explanation, you attach whatever it is that you think has come, that idea, whatever that idea is, and they know that. And they know that because they've been studying you for a very long time.
They spent billions studying us.
Billions.
Billions. They have multiple PhDs, psychology PhD. They have unlimited resources. There was one time, I think, just before Bush left office, reportedly left office, allegedly left office, I should say, that they were spending $8 billion a year on psychological studies for films, TV, advertising.
Oh, yes, just recently, earlier this year, Obamacare people for Organizing for Action sat down with writers, producers, directors of your favorite sitcoms to inject Obamacare, pro-Obamacare plot lines into your favorite shows.
$192 million a day, wasn't it? Or something like that?
Yeah, out of a nonprofit grant that came from out of California, the California Endowment.
Yeah, that's, well, I mean, those of us who recognize rhetoric and deceptions, you know, we can pick those out of these TV shows and movies. I've watched TV shows and seen the rhetoric, seen the manipulations, and they are very, very funny when you can recognize them, but they are very, very effective to those who can't.
Absolutely. And the problem is there are very, very few people who are conscious. Most of us operate on a subconscious or unconscious level, even though we think that we're conscious. And you know whether or not you're conscious or unconscious because you're either reacting emotionally or you're acting logically. That's it. It's very, very simple. Next time you get some information that causes you to have an emotional reaction, if you then immediately react to that, you're unconscious. If you take that information, recognize the emotion that it infuses in you, and take a step back and think about that logically, maybe look at some evidence, maybe even consult someone that you trust. Hey, what's your opinion on this? And then come up to your own conclusion, and then make an action based on that, you are conscious.
Yes, it is.
Now, with these manufactured revolutions, it's very, 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 very simple. Who doesn't want to be free? If you think that you're not free, if you think that you're not sovereign, then someone else must have a way to get you back to that point. And if they come up to you and they have a way and they have a group you can belong to and they have some things you can do to get that started, then you're part of this emotional manufactured agenda. Well, and go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, that's why they've been for many, many years in the media, especially in the last 30 years that I can remember since they've come out with this 24/7, 365, what they claim is media. They will always tell you things like, well, you know, what are you going to do about it? You can't really do anything about the government. You can't really fight City Hall. There's nothing really that you can do about it. And that's just a psychological imprint, if you will.
Oh, of course. But then there's the other flip side of that. Hey, we've got the answer. Let's go do this.
That's right. Protest, 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 protest.
When people protest, it's because they believe that someone has something that they don't have and they want it back. It's begging the government to give you back something that they took from you, that you believe that they took from you. All they have to do is plant in your mind the idea that you don't have something. They do it all the time. Consumers react emotionally. They make the people who react emotionally make the best consumers. They buy things that they don't need with money that they don't have, and usually for people that they don't like. We do it for status. We do it for recognition. We do it because somewhere way back in our childhood, we were told or taught that we are not special, that we are not smart, that we are not capable. Our self-esteem was broken many, many, many years ago, and we've been operating on a broken idea of who we are, and we look through at the world with those filters. Yes. And when someone comes along and says, hey, I know you're disenfranchised. I know that you lost your home. I know that you lost your Second Amendment rights. I know that you lost your First Amendment rights. Hey, I got a group over here. We got some pitchforks. We got some fire.
We got
Let's
some clubs.
Let's go storm the gates.
That's right. We got some clubs. We got some chains.
Exactly.
Let's go do it.
Peaceful resolution. Now, in 1973, there was a gentleman who's still alive. His name is Gene Sharp, and he wrote a book, From Dictatorship to Democracy, which is 198 ways to topple your government using nonviolent resistance. The first group, who was nameless and faceless and had no leader, they were a group called Optor in 1998. And in Serbia, they were successful in toppling their government. They caught the attention of a couple of groups. The National Center for the National Endowment for Democracy, the International Republican Institute. John McCain sits on the board of the International Republican Institute, just to give you an idea of what they're about. And it's funny because hasn't John McCain been caught in pictures with people from the Ukraine, the Ukrainian opposition, the Egyptian opposition,
Syria,
the Syrian,
yeah.
What they learned in Serbia from the Optor movement was Gene Sharp's how-to, and they did the most incredible thing. I wrote this article. It's up on OccupyCorporatism.com, warning how U.S. is spending taxpayer money to initiate mass civil unrest. And at the bottom of the article is a 52-minute documentary from the International Republican Institute that explains a lot of what I'm saying. And they were so proud of their accomplishments in the Middle East, starting with the Optor movement, that they decided to put it to film with lots of great interviews, including representatives from the International Republican Institute and Gene Sharp himself. And when I watched this documentary, my jaw hit the floor, and it really hasn't come back up since. Because I see evidence of this everywhere, including here domestically in the United States. And it concerns me. The Cuban Twitter is just one mechanism. Social media is just one mechanism. But it's a very powerful one, because 47% of us are getting our news from social media, which means we believe what we see. And Facebook, just a couple of weeks ago, with the university, it's California in San Diego, they posed a question. They wanted to know whether or not they could control emotions over Facebook by posting on Facebook and then monitoring and influencing the comments, and they were successful. What they found is when you post something on Facebook, the people reading that post are 2 times more affected by what you wrote than you were when you wrote it. That's a lot of power. They also found that people who comment have this need inside them, and it's part of a personality paradigm, that they feel that they need to explain to other people how they feel. They need to validate their feelings. Remember, we make decisions based on what makes us comfortable in the paradigm in which we are existing, based on what we learned as children, what we learned in infancy about the world and how to cope with situations.
Yes, exactly. I was just thinking, I've said this many times on the air. They have to create upheaval and unrest here in America too. It's obvious that over the past 5 years of my research anyways, that they've been doing that with social media here in America already. And of course, the consequences of that are going to be very, very bloody, because the gun owners just aren't going to give their guns up here in America, no matter what anyone says. They're just not going to do it.
And they shouldn't. We should not give away any more of our freedoms to any government agency or any corporation or any person in our personal life that wants to take them from us. We need to stop giving away what is rightfully ours. But we also need to understand that when we react emotionally, we are feeding into the agendas. And if they're changing the government heads in other countries right now, through manufactured revolutions, why couldn't it happen here in the United States?
Yes.
Has it ever dawned on anyone listening to this broadcast that they want to get rid of the government that we have right now? They want to create a situation where they have the capability of installing a new government, a new patsy?
Yeah, exactly. They did it 230... some odd years ago. They manufactured that revolution, and they created it.
Sure. And with the Civil War. You know, what they learned with the Civil War was, during the Civil War, the workers got sick of the conditions in which they were working in the North, and they started rioting. And they really didn't care. The entire country was ravaged at that point. They were broken, homeless. And they didn't have anything left. So guess what? When the cops showed up, they went to town. They started beating them up. Even if they got killed, it didn't matter at that point. There was one factory, 900 women in this factory. The roof caved in, and they all died. And no one cared, except the people who lost their families. And that's the conditions that they were living in. Well, this became very problematic for people like the bankers, the corporations. They realize over time that every 30 years, because of the situation that we're in, the parameters that the governments that are created for us put us in, we only have so much before we break. We can only take so much, I apologize, before we break. And they've noticed that it happens about every 30 years. And you can read Howard Zinn's The People's History of the United States of America, and there's a wellspring of information in that about what I'm talking about right now. Every 30 years, there was a revolt. Well, they realized that they can't have that because people were burning down cities. They said, okay, fine, you're going to take our homes, you're going to take our ability to work. Well, fine, we'll burn down your entire city. And they did. The people did. And they realized we can't have the people doing this. So over time, they have come up with this ingenious scheme, and they were using it for foreign policy right now, except it's come home here to the United States, and no one seems to be noticing that. The same manufactured revolutions that are happening around the world have come here, because it's about time for them to install a new government. We all know what's going on. The jig is up. We all know.
Oh, yes.
And even if... Go ahead.
No, I just... I went through my head 5 years ago when I started researching Suzanne. Once I have my paradigm blown, you know, you can go through scenarios in your head and you can see things. Well, I can anyways. I don't know if others can, but I can. And I went through all of these scenarios and I realized that there really is no form of government that benefits people. It only benefits the oligarchy and the elite.
Yes. Democracy, you know, it's kind of funny that we are completely convinced that we live in a democracy. We are supposed to be a constitutional republic, not a democracy. Democracy ends in mob rule and police state every single time. Go look at it throughout history. It always ends in mob rule and police state. Well, we have police state here, and for all intents and purposes, we do have mob rule. We police ourselves. If we don't like what someone is doing, we call the police. We call CPS. We report things from school. Teachers are telling parents, you can't send your kid to this school unless they're on a mood stabilizer. That's ridiculous. This isn't, not that the psychiatric community has any validity, but it's not even a licensed psychiatrist or psychologist talking. It's the vice principal of the school.
Right, yeah. that really gets me. A lot of scientists don't even give psychology and psychiatry any validity at all. They think it's all junk science, and I tend to believe them.
I noticed that there are some natural hardwired urges that we have. The way in which they control the masses to participate in a fake revolution so that they can install a new government in the country in which they're trying to usurp is through our need to survive. One of the ways in which we do that is we look at the most successful in our group and we copy them. The next thing that we do is get as close to that person as possible. Here in our culture in the United States, we look up to celebrities. We try to look like them and dress like them and talk like them and act like them. Celebrities come in all forms of media. It's not just Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. Your favorite rock star, your favorite radio show host, your favorite broadcaster. Anyone in media has a sphere of influence if they are able to speak to a large enough amount of people. Statistically speaking, that sphere of influence means that that person who is standing up speaking to those people can get them to do what they want. Case in point was a PSA that was put out a couple of years ago with Tim McGraw telling his audience, please don't text and drive. I agree with him. Don't text and drive. However, Tim McGraw coming out and saying that means that they know that everyone who listens to Tim McGraw or anyone who admires him, and it's multi-generational, the mothers pass it down to their daughters and their sons. So there's a large group of people who are not texting while they're driving simply because Tim McGraw said that. That is where the problem is. When we do what we're told because someone that we admire told us to do it, we don't do what we want. We do what we're told.
Yes, yes, exactly. There was a comment. I thought maybe you could, there was a comment in one of the chats, Suzanne. I thought maybe you could make a comment.
Sure.
And this comment is, good time to insert black president in the White House. Fuel for the fire for some. Hey,
I don't know if it doesn't do us any good to be racist about anything. It doesn't do us any good to be bigoted or misogynistic about anything that's going on. It's much bigger than that. People are what they do. They're not what they say. Now, we put so much emphasis on what we hear and we act on what we hear and we pay no attention to what people do. Case in point, any politician who is running for re-election this year or next year, or any politician who's ever run for re-election, they do horrible things while they're in office, and then the year before they want that seat back, they go out and do the most incredibly wonderful, you know, they're kissing babies and they're saving lives and they're out there rallying with all of us, getting down in the dregs and
creating
rolling
jobs.
Up their sleeves,
yeah.
You know. We completely forget what they did throughout their term in office. Completely forget. Oh, but wait a minute. They just did this wonderful thing. I'm going to elect them.
Yes.
We're so confused. I was talking with my father just the other day, and he said, well, you know, Hillary Clinton, she, you know, I would like to see a woman in the office. So I think I'll vote for Hillary Clinton. I said, I'd like to see a woman in office too, but I don't think Hillary Clinton is a good candidate. And he says, well, who else would be running against her? And I said, well, it looks like Jeb Bush might be running against her. And he says, my father says, well, if it's Jeb Bush running, then I liked him as governor for Florida. I would vote for him. We were not discussing their politics. We were not discussing what they've done and what they plan on doing. We were simply discussing whether or not my father likes these two people.
Right.
And that's not qualification. I might have a bus company, and I might be hiring drivers, and I might like a gentleman who comes into my office to interview for a position, but if he's qualified to drive the bus and keep the people safe who are going to be riding in the bus, that's more important than my opinion of them. But that's where the marketing is. It doesn't matter what this person's capable of doing or what they have done. We like them. They've got the right haircut. They've got the right clothes on. They say the right things. They look good. When they smile, there's a little glimmer shining off of their crest whitened teeth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know if you took that comment wrongly or not, but I don't know. It was just a generic comment. You know, a good time to insert a what seemingly might be slave-related president. You know, the former. I don't know. Supposedly, he's son of a African goat herder or something like that. But others claim he has an American father. You know, a actual African American heritage. So maybe he has some repression in his past. But anyways, I was actually just gonna say that comment to maybe you could comment on the article that I wrote a few weeks back and placed on the U.S. Independent, the one that was called "Is Obama the One?" I kind of detailed my thoughts. Maybe he's the one to bring in their New World Order.
Well, we're seeing right now organization for other manufactured revolutions, even here in the United States. And whether or not he's the foundation layer or the frame builder or the guy who puts the roof on or the guy who welcomes you into the new manufactured home that you're going to be living in, the agenda is coming through. It, to me, whoever's sitting in that seat, it doesn't matter. It's just a portal for them to get to their end game, which is controlling this country, creating a nation of workers, Agenda 21, living in shoeboxes. Your idea of what you consider individualism and sovereignty and nationalism is gone and replaced with globalism, one world currency, one world digital currency, so that they don't have to worry about you using cash. They can track everything that you're allowed to purchase. So for me, Obama could have been anyone. It just happened to be Obama.
Yes. I think that that one world government is in the future, but I don't think it's in his future. I think he's just one of the setup guys.
Well, these things take a lot of time. It takes some time to shift the entire consciousness and view of an entire nation. It takes a minute. It may take a couple of generations. Look how far we've come from the way we gathered information and disseminated it in the 70s to today. Journalists used to go on and interview people and search out a story and work for weeks or months before they reported. And there were fact checkers. And the editors didn't just edit out stuff that wasn't favorable to the corporations who paid their salary, but wanted the people to have good information so that they could make informed decisions. It's completely shifted. What we see in the majority of media out there, and I'm lumping everyone together, is tabloid journalism. It's no different than the Weekly World News. In fact, Piers Morgan used to be the chief editor for The Sun, which is a tabloid journalism outlet.
Right.
And he's sitting there, and I know that he's been fired, but it doesn't matter. He's just, you know, people need to remember, Piers Morgan is a product. And he hasn't been canceled. He's just been moved over. He doesn't have the show that he had. He's got another show that's going to be airing once a month. So they're just reinventing him. They're just rebranding him for a little while, and then they'll spit him back out in some other form.
Yes.
Look at Bill O'Reilly. People forget that he worked for Hard Copy. Hard Copy was a tabloid journalism show.
Yes, it was.
And now he's supposed to be an authority. Does anybody remember where he came from? No, it doesn't matter. We all forget because we're dealing with what's happening now, and it's so sensational and so emotional. The other thing people forget is these are actors. These are salesmen. They're selling a product. So what Bill O'Reilly's personal or actual opinions are, they're not voiced on his show, folks. He's playing a part, and he gets ratings, and he makes money for the people who have put him up there. And he's good at selling his product.
He has a script, and he reads from a teleprompter.
Exactly. You have to be careful about those teleprompter readers.
Yeah. And believe me, he doesn't write that script either. He has psychologists and psychiatrists do that for him, because they have all the deceptions right in there. They tell him what to say. They even, I would imagine they even rehearse some of the things that they do, that you see.
Sure. They have meetings where everybody sits down. And if you need a visual, just think about a boardroom and people from various areas of media, independent, alternative, and mainstream, sitting down at the boardroom. And some guy walks in with a bunch of papers, and they're stapled together, and he passes out these papers to everyone sitting at the table, and this is the official story. And some people take this stance, and some people take that stance. It creates controversy. The audience is forced to take sides.
Divide
and
conquer.
The audience is forced to have an emotional reaction, so they have to defend. If they like Bill O'Reilly, they have to take his side and defend him.
Yep.
If they like Brian Williams' side, they take his side and defend him and go along with whatever he says. And this causes confusion, but it also causes the ability for people to stand up for something, except it's not what they want, and it's not what they think. It's what someone else wants, and it's what someone else thinks. We just confuse ourselves when we take in those slogans, like an idea whose time has come, and we look up to these people in media and say, I really like that person. I believe everything that they say. It's called branded loyalty. Once they have you with branded loyalty, you'll make excuses for anything, regardless of what your favorite person said, because it goes back to our survival. It goes back to what I was saying. We copy the most successful in our group.
Yes, we do. Yeah. I know people. I know. I actually know a senior producer, or actually the senior producer for a local station in my area. And he more or less told me one time that they get little digital packages from the big boys. You know, they're a CBS affiliate here in my area. So they get little digital packages from the corporate structure. And all they do is they just put these digital shows right into their programming and run it as live. So what you see on CBS Nightly News or ABC or CNN or Fox, it's not actually live. It's been pre-taped.
Yes. Now, just to give everyone a little example, when Clinton was first running for president, he did something that since a lot of people have copied, but he was the first to do it. He gave questionnaires to the Gallup poll and other census bureaus and had them ask the people questions. And based on statistical data, he would then come out when he was rallying to get people to vote for him, and he would regurgitate the most important points that people had based on their demographic. So if he was speaking to people in urban cities, if he was speaking to minorities, he would get that data and then regurgitate whatever was important to them. And it sounded like he knew what we wanted. It sounded like he cared, but it was all manufactured. Think about that next time you go to sign a survey or fill out an online survey just to win maybe $1,000 off a card for your favorite big box store that you like to go to.
Or an iPad or an iPhone or something, yeah.
Right. In order for you to exchange your freedom, you have to receive something. It's purchasing. It's marketing.
Yeah.
So you get a bumper sticker in exchange for more tyranny. But you feel free because you have the bumper sticker. You feel free because you put it on the back of your car, and now everybody knows that you go to this website or you support this person. But really what it is reinforcing not only the marketing for yourself, because you've taken it into your personal paradigm. Now, this person that you look up to, that you put their bumper sticker on the backside of your car, is now part of you, and they help to represent who you are.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is a high price to pay for the situation that we're in now.
Yes,
one other way that we can recognize that we are operating under our paradigm is that we go to make decisions and we do not get the results that we intended. Think about that, folks. How many protests have we had? How many situations have we been in where we disagreed with the agenda of our government, local or federal, and yet nothing changes? It might be, and I know this is a radical thought, it might be that the methods by which we are fighting the New World Order are ineffectual. And we might have to think outside of the box that we've been given and think about other ways to make sure that we put some sort of a monkey wrench in the whole machine and get it to stop at least long enough for us to regroup and get ourselves situated.
Yes, I know. Getting back to the original subject there, Suzanne, what do you think the implications of... What do you think some of the implications of this supposed structuring, the social structuring of social media in Cuba by the American government?
Well, we're headed into we're in the beginnings of a second Cold War, folks. Now, this has been a long time coming. If you remember from the first Cold War, Cuba was strategic. So is the Ukraine. So I think, and this is just my opinion, it is the purpose of the United States government to isolate Russia as much as possible. Now, they are part of the BRICS nations, and China is one of them, so they have some really good friends. But if the U.S. government can get a hold of situations, countries, people that cause problems and isolate the Russian government and the country, then that would be fortuitous for them, because the EU really, really, really wants the Ukraine, and rightfully so. They've got natural gas. They are a breadbasket.
And they have a major strategic port.
Yes.
Seaport.
The EU does not produce any oil or natural gas. If they acquired the Ukraine, they would be able to be a formidable opponent on the global markets. Not only that, but Russia would have to redirect all of their pipelines from the natural gas and the petrol through somewhere else. And yes, they can do that, but it's going to be a little bit of a deal.
Yes, it will. Why don't you take this last minute or so and tell everybody how they can find you, Suzanne. We're just about done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know.
My website is OccupyCorporatism.com. The news agency that I've started, because I believe that we need good information to make better decisions, because the ones that we are making now are not getting the results that we want. And so I started the U.S. Independent. Stephen is a contributor, as well as some wonderful people, Dane Wigington, Thomas Sheridan, Charlotte Iserby. We've got 25 great contributors, international correspondents.
Rima Labo.
Yes, yes. I think that if we are able to get good evidentiary information from people who are making reports, not because they have an agenda, but because they really want to make changes to their respective country and ours as well, that we need to go to those sources and not react. Stop reacting, but take a step back and think about it logically. Does it benefit you? Does it benefit your family? Does it benefit our country? Does it benefit any country? And if the answer is no, don't do it.
Absolutely. So I'd like to take this last half a minute or so here before the music comes on and thank you for coming on and giving us this news.
I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so.
Yes. I thought I should have been hearing music already, but... I don't know. I'll just go ahead and sign off for the day. Thank you, everybody at Revolution Radio. It's been a great show. Thank David Livingstone, and thanks Suzanne Pozell. I'm Stephen Roberts, and this has been Revolution Radio's Cancel the Cabal. I'm just going to let the studio go and say goodnight, everyone.